You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com. Have you ever wondered what it's like inside a screenwriter's mind? In this podcast, we explore how successful screenwriters tackle structure, plot, character, dialogue, and the film business. Get ready to go down the rabbit hole of story as we pull the best interviews from the archives of the IFH Podcast Network. Let's travel inside the screenwriter's mind. This episode originally aired on the Make Your Movie with Dave Bullis podcast.
Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
I'm really happy to be here, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you know, my pleasure, Tom. You're a person I've been meaning to have on the podcast for a while. I really admire, your work and the work that you and Scott do for Screenwriting Masterclass. And, it's good that we could actually, have this conversation now.
Oh, it's great. I'm glad you've been enjoying the classes, and it's been good to have you in with us in our classes.
Oh, yeah, I've been enjoying the classes a lot. And there's a question I usually ask most people, when we start off is, I want to ask Tom, how did you get started, in the film industry?
How did I get started? Well, I fell in love with movies when I was a kid, and we had a neighbor who was a filmmaker, Burt Balaban, and we were on the set of his movies a couple of times, and I just loved to go to the movies. I have this weird, there were these movie theaters in our town, and I would go and see the West. We'd go to see when I was a little kid, the 20 cartoons matinee in the afternoon, and then an Abbott and Costello movie. And my parents really liked movies. My mom really liked movies. So like the first movie I saw in a theater was Bridge Over the River Kwai. And she took us to New York and saw that in a theater when I was a little kid. So, I just always really loved movies, and I would just go. I wouldn't go by myself when I was a kid, but I have this one memory of I really wanted to go see this Western that was playing, and my friend Larry didn't want to go. So I actually said, okay, I'll buy your ticket. So I like paid for him to go just so we would do that in that afternoon. I think the movie was She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, and I have no idea what, how that whatever promotion for that movie made me want to see it. But so I just really liked movies. And then when I was in college, I started making films, and I just, decided that's what I wanted to do. And at that time, there was sort of the 70s and the 80s was a great time for movies. There's a lot of excitement, and there were a lot of film students who were breaking into film. And I did my junior year abroad in Paris and went to film school and made a film. It was actually in French. It was my student film. And I then came out to California when I finished school with my French student film under my arm and a spec script that I'd written, and tried to make my way and, sell the script and get work. And that was a process. But I worked at, I did like different kinds of jobs. And this guy hired me to write and direct an educational film, which was like it was a story film. It was sort of a Red Balloon kind of film. And I made that film and it won an award in a festival, which kind of gave me a little bit of hope. And I kept writing scripts along the way. And then I got an agent and had some jobs and, nothing that really panned out into anything. They were fun and interesting jobs that I had. I optioned a script to a guy, Rick Rosenthal, who became a director and TV director and still very active out here as a company called Whitewater. And so I optioned a script to him. And then I wrote a script that got some interest from Bob Zemeckis through my brother. Was a lawyer and he was working with Larry Kasdan, and Zemeckis was a friend of his. And I wrote the script. My brother liked the script and he gave it to those guys. He gave it to Kasdan and Kasdan gave it to Zemeckis, and Zemeckis really loved the script and he wanted to make the movie. So, that was sort of, that was my first taste of anything which really was going to be, breaking into the scaling the walls of the studios, so to speak. And that project nothing ended up happening with it. Because Bob Zemeckis, I thought, it was like this, he had done Used Cars and I Want to Hold Your Hand. He and Bob Gale were Spielberg's sort of proteges of the time. And then Spielberg directed their script, 1941, which was a huge flop at the time. It was just like a big, it was like Spielberg's first movie that he'd made that hadn't worked. So when Zemeckis got interested in my script, it was like the tail end of that first wave of what he, had going in the business. So it wasn't the greatest of times for him, but, he loved my script and he wanted to do it. And he, we took it to all these places and nothing happened with it. So I was kind of charged by that. I felt like, wow, it was like more than it ever happened to me. And it was exciting and it was a fun thing. And I was still kicking that script around and trying to do things with it and working on another script. And then about 6 months later, the phone rang and it was Zemeckis. And he said, hey, Tom, I have this project at Fox and I need a writer to develop it with me. Would you be interested? And, of course I was interested. So that was Cocoon. It was this unpublished novel. And the producers were these mega producers, Richard Zanuck and David Brown. They'd done Jaws and Sting and all these things. They had this big deal at Fox. So he had that deal of developing that project with him. And there, a writer had done an adaptation. It was an unpublished novel and this guy had done an adaptation of it, and no one was very happy with it. And so they gave me that material and said, well, can you do something with it? So I, figured out a pitch and had to go in and, I pitched it to Bob, tried to figure out something that would sort of work with his sensibility in terms of what the material was. And I kind of reinvented what they had before and reinvented the novel in a lot of ways and used the story and just changed a lot of elements, characters and things to it. And kept some, the basic sci-fi story that was there. I stuck with that. And, it was about the story is exactly what the movie is, but, many adjustments later, I think. And, pitched that to Zanuck and Brown and Lily Zanuck, Richard Zanuck's wife. And they bought, they hired me to write that script. And so that was my first, amazingly, there was all this drama at the studio. The studio, Zemeckis then went off to do Romancing the Stone. And they ended up having a lot of problems with the studio with Romancing the Stone. And our movie, Cocoon, I wrote the script and it got greenlit. You know, it was like they wanted to make that movie with Zemeckis, but then he was off making this other movie for Fox, and they were having all this. He was really tangling with some people, with Michael Douglas and other people at the studio about that project in some ways. So it ended up, they ended up not wanting him to direct Cocoon. So we had this movie that was greenlit, and we didn't have a director. And then it was some, I then suggested Ron Howard because of Splash, and miraculously Ron Howard had read the script before and was interested in the project, and you know, the producers convinced him to do it. And so, you know, that was my, you know, my big wave. That was my way in. That was my first Writers Guild job. And that was my, you know, first, you know, movie that got made.
So after that, Tom, did you get a lot of like people wanting to work with you and like a lot of directors wanting to sit down with you to talk about their projects?
Yeah. I mean, that was like, yeah, it was pretty, you know, it was like such, yeah, once the movie got going, I started getting, you know, some work started coming my way, you know, with other producers wanted to work with me because the movie was, you know, in development. I was sort of like, you know, in the game a little bit, so to speak. And then when the movie came out and it turned out to be a hit, and you know, and it was well liked by people by the people in the business. It was just, you know, people really, really, really were very kind about the movie, and so yeah, I just started getting, you know, and the business was so different than the studio system. You know, the studio, like Cocoon, would not get made now. I mean, it might get made somehow. Someone would struggle and fight and get it made, but you know, it was like a $20 million, at that time, a $20 million movie, which is a very low budget studio movie, about as low as you could do at a studio at that time, I think, and with no stars. You know, Steve Guttenberg wasn't really, he was a star, but he wasn't, you know, like a movie star. He wasn't he wasn't a guy who was known to just, you know, put to get movies, any movie couldn't be put together with him. And at that time, so so that was, you know, then you know, yeah, people just started throwing me every kind of job you could imagine. You know, it was just like, yeah, things changed. So I got a lot of work after that. Definitely a lot of, you know, things going on that way.
You know, you touched on something too, Tom, that I wanted to talk about, which was, you mentioned, you know, that movie wouldn't get made today. And, you know, I think you're right, because I, you know, everything now is either like a low budget, you know, $1 to $5 million movie, or it's a huge superhero movie. And, you know, that's something now where I wonder, you know, where is that middle ground that used to be, you know what I mean? And so, you know, where I wanted to ask you is, excuse me. I wanted to ask you is, you know, what would you do if you were a screenwriter starting off right now? You know, what would you do, you know, to sort of, you know, get your foot in the door again, knowing the marketplace is where it is right now?
I would write a great script in whatever you are interested, that writers feels they have in their heart that they can embrace 100% and really feel committed to emotionally and spiritually and physically and just like, you know, on every level, and just write a great script. And if you write a great script, then you have a writing sample. And, you know, in terms of the practicalities of what can get made, yeah, you know, it's better to write something that can be made for a price. And even if the marketplace doesn't allow for that kind of thing as much, if you want to be in the feature game, you have to write a feature film. And, you know, so, and it may be that writing an enclosed, a low, something low, doing, you know, mixing it up, writing something that's, you know, an enclosed thriller or something that's extremely low budget that, you know, can be really made cheaply and yet is a genre film. I think that's something that the studios are interested in. It's, you know, I think that if you embrace a genre, you if you want to work for the studios, if you want to work in that context, you kind of have to look at the movies that they're making and embrace that kind of movie and do something which demonstrates that you can do that better than anybody else that they're going to have. So, you know, that they're, my agent has all these writers working for Marvel, you know, I mean, so, you know, so there are people who are specialists in that, and that's they've dedicated themselves to that. They love that, and that's what they do, and that's the kind of work that they're getting. And they may have come at it from somewhere else. They may have written something that was a more specific sci-fi or very, you know, heightened kind of action film that got them there, but something that really corresponds to what that realm is and to the kind of scenes and the kind of character development, the kind of stories that are in that genre. And, you know, there are other kinds of genres that, you know, there's the horror genre, and, you know, there's a few, you know, there's action thrillers, you know, one character action thrillers, which is probably, you know, the most, you know, a simpler version of, you know, of a less expensive kind of movie that the studios can make, where they can make it with one star. And if it's, you know, if it's a compelling story, original, it can be, you know, I think it's going to be the next Taken or something like that. So that's the way in, and it's much more limited. You know, I mean, there used to be development executives, there used to be a point of pride that a development executive would have two projects that they loved, but were very difficult to get off the ground or sort of impossible, but they loved them. So they had, you know, so that those people aren't, that's not something that is part of the mix right now. The people who are left as the development executives are, you know, they're, it's business, you know, it's just very, you know, it's pared down to the being specific to what the necessities of international distribution are. And that's, you know, that's the studios. And then there's television. You know, I think that television is kind of that picked up the slack, and all these people are moving into television. And the television is just taking a lot of different forms, and, you know, 6-episode series or 10-episode series, you know, cable shows are 10 episodes and for a season, and that's it. And then there are, you know, Netflix does these small films now. There's Tallulah just came out on Netflix. It was a good little film with Ellen Page and Allison Janney, which is like Juno. But it's straight up there on Netflix. And Baz Luhrmann's doing The Get Down on Netflix, which is a really interesting show. So television is really, and what I was saying about in television, there's, you know, limited series are significant, and series that have few episodes are significant. So something that could be a feature film could also be put into one of those contexts. But, you know, and also making your own film, making an independent film, or just trying to do something that's really small that goes to the independent market. And there's not a lot of money in that, but if your heart is in an idea, in a project, you kind of have to do it and try and find a way. And people find a way, things rise up. You know, everybody's hoping that this year, that at the festivals and wherever, that some great stuff is going to rise up. So if people keep making movies and keep writing scripts, and then good things will happen.
Yeah, you know, you made another good point, Tom, which is about TV. You know, that's where a lot of good writers now that I even know personally are all aiming for TV now rather than feature films. And I think part of the reason is because of the budget issue, where, you know, you want to make a feature film. You know, and they look at it and they go, well, you know, maybe this would be better as episodic, because that's, you know, everyone has been, you know, conditioned to binge watch it, or, you know what I mean? And we're in the golden age of TV. There's so many good TV shows on, you know, out there. And, you know, I think, you know, even some of the producers that maybe would have made those movies, those feature films, even a few years ago, have maybe too much on their plate, or they just aren't making those types of movies anymore.
Yeah, I think it's hard for the producers. The producers are reluctant to develop a lot of things because it's really hard to set them up. It's just they don't, you know, the studios aren't giving the producers budgets for development, and they're just not buying. They only buy scripts when they're going to go into production a lot of the time now, apparently. So yeah, it's TV is really picking up the slack, and you know, and I think that it's this breakdown which is occurring in the but I think that, you know, once things eventually the theatrical film is not going to go away. It's that form is important, and people don't just want to watch series. People don't always want to just get hooked into something that's going to take them 10 hours to watch. They want to sit down with a group of people or by themselves and watch something that's 2 hours, and that form is primal to film entertainment. So it's not going anywhere. It's just right now we're in kind of a, it's in kind of a downswing in terms of the certain sectors of the kinds of films that are getting made. And it's probably going to change. And it may not be that the movie theaters are going to be as important as they were, but I think that there's always going to be room for a good movie, for a good script and a good movie.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
It's just, but I think that in practical terms, having a TV script is something where people feel like they can do something with it. There's all these channels, there's all these outlets that are all looking for stuff. So, you know, and there, you know, if you take the difference between the way that Warner Brothers is trying to find material for movies, Warner Brothers films, versus the way that AMC, the AMC channel, is looking for projects, I would guess that AMC is a lot more, you know, fun place to go to if you really want to sell something these days.
Yeah, you know, because AMC, you know, with The Walking Dead, and they also have Breaking Bad, and, you know, and you know, like you said, though, a lot of people are taking more chances because, you know, I heard a rumor that Vudu, which is owned by Walmart, is going to start making their own original content because everyone wants to get into that game of creating their own original, you know, movies and TV shows.
Yeah, I mean, this idea of the content bubble is, you know, they said 2 years ago, somebody said that there was a content bubble and it was going to go all, you know, there were too many shows and all this. Well, the bubble hasn't gone away. And, you know, I was, the truth is that a show that, a cable show that is doing really well, the number of people who are actually watching it, it would be canceled. It would have been canceled 15 years ago if it were a network show. So it doesn't have to do that much business. It's like this, it's kind of this large scale version of the long tail where people, you know, where there are so many niches, you know, and if you fit into a niche and you write something of quality, create a show of quality that really, that people who are passionate about that niche and beyond, you know, respond to, then, you know, it's going to work. So you have all these channels and they're all looking for stuff. They're all looking for ways to survive or make themselves more prominent than they are. And so, you know, there are all these channels you never heard of are all sort of have one eye on doing some, you know, some kind of TV series or some kind of filmed entertainment show that's not just what their standard mix might be. So, yeah, so there's, you know, there's a lot going on. There's also, you know, things that are just on the web, just web series. And, you know, there are these verticals, which are grouped together web shows that are, you know, just a bunch of web channels that are part of one organization. And there's just going to be more. That's just starting. And now it's, you know, people, you know, treat it like, oh, you know, some people love YouTube and some people feel like they don't relate to it. And they feel like it's not for them. And then they generalize that realm is never going to be something that they would ever want to work in. Well, it's going to evolve. I mean, all these things are going to evolve. Maybe it won't be YouTube specific. Maybe YouTube will stay the realm of what it is now, which is, you know, I enjoy some of the things that are on there, but it may be that it will really, you know, there'll be more diversification. There'll be more different kinds of shows, even within YouTube. So there's a lot of opportunity and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of ways to go. And you can, you know, having a good script is a beginning and then being industrious about figuring out where it can fit in.
You know, we just were talking about web series too, because you know, I took that class with you about creating a web series, and you know, that is something too. You know, I've noticed was that there's more web series competitions springing up more and more. You know, and they're very open because there's no, you know, set page count. You know what I mean? Like, so some can, you know, they're like, hey, if your entry is 5 pages or whether it's 25 pages, as long as you're, you know, you have this concept for, you know, the channel or for the project in general, you know, you will accept these entries.
You can it can be whatever you want it to be. I mean, someone can define if something's really compelling and it's 30 minutes, it's people are going to watch it. I mean, it's just a matter of doing something that's of quality, doing something that really, you know, that really is, you know, outstanding for people and satisfies and, you know, is resonant. And I think, you know, you can bring the same skill sets of and the same emotional tools that you'd put in a screenplay to these short forms. And you can also use the short form to boost a script or a movie. There's a lot more of people putting together reels to try and sell projects. You know, they're sort of like to really investing in whatever their idea is and having a way to present it that really injects it into people's heads in a creative way. So it may not just be reading the script. It's, you know, there's more to it. And that's, you know, as a writer, I would prefer if it was just this level playing field and it was this orderly situation where people were reading the scripts and then, you know, making rational decisions about them after having, you know, a good experience reading the script. But people are doing more and more to try and enhance the possibilities of something and get people's attention to the material that they have.
Yeah, one common tactic that I've seen is to make something into like a transmedia project, you know, where it's, you know, a web series and or it starts off as a novel and then you make the movie or then you write the script and say, hey, it's based off the novel by the same writer. You know, I've seen people, you know, more people trying to package things, you know, like we were talking about setting up projects. And, you know, what they would try to do is also get Facebook Facebook fans for their page, you know, Twitter followers. And that way, when you're pitching to people, they can say, hey, look, we already have, you know, 10,000 people on this fan page.
Yeah. And that, you know, that speaks to the idea that you can so much that you can do yourself and that you can't, you know, going back to the feature realm. You know, there's this, you know, people who are doing a Kickstarter, you know, you can get a movie done that way. You can, you know, if you have a script and if you, you know, you have to, there's an art and a science to doing Kickstarter or Seed and Spark. And that's a way to build the following for your script and kind of figure out, well, is there, you know, find the audience for it. And then if you do a Kickstarter and you start a Facebook page and you do all these things and people, and you're able to communicate what your film is and get people and people resonate with it, then that's, you know, that's the kind of a test of, you know, if you do that, then your project, it bodes well for your project. So, you know, so it's a good thing to do. But again, it's really like, it's just not just having the script, but then doing all these other things. And sometimes rather than going around and trying to get sort of go around to the agents and managers and producers and try and get permission to do something, which, you know, or get them to approve what you've done so that they can then go out and market it. If you really just go into the trenches with it and just, you know, try and figure out a way to get it done yourself, or that may be more productive ultimately. So,
yeah, very, very, very true, Tom. You know, Tom, I wanted to, you know, ask, as, you know, we get to our conversation about, you know, making projects, you know, what sort of advice, you know, would you give to somebody who was, who was thinking about writing a screenplay? For you know, I usually say beginners, but if you don't mind, Tom, what would you say to somebody who maybe even is beyond a beginner and maybe like intermediate to advanced? You know, what would you give, you know, any advice to them about, you know, sort of writing for their next screenplay, whether it be about structure or whether it be about concept? Is there anything, you know, that you could comment about?
I would say, you know, great character driving plot, great characters. And really having a, you know, making sure that your movie is really about something and, you know, working to the heart of what it is. And, you know, that's probably, you know, just giving your project, you know, I've been saying this a lot, giving your project love, you know, giving it all the love you can and really, you know, make it great. And, you know, be able to enunciate what it is, really say what it is, and not to oversimplify it, but to really sort of have an, you know, be able to be clear. You know, you might not know it when you start out, what it's really about, but you might not know what sort of the mirror, you know, what the important things that your characters go through that they really discover about themselves, or what they, you know, what they finally conquer, or just like, you know, what that could mean to people who would be hearing about the project. So they hear about, you know, so they might hear about a high concept, some sort of hook of what the plot is or where it takes place, which sounds really, oh, that's interesting. I haven't heard that. You know, I'd like to see that. But then if the closer is, and this person, this guy or this woman, what happened to them, the main character's experience in their own life, in their own terms of what happens to them through the story, which is going to translate to, you know, it's going to be the people who hear the story, watch the film, or read the script, they're going to grow from whatever that growth is that takes place in the character. And, you know, sometimes that's not it. Sometimes characters don't change. They don't grow. And it's not every movie, and not to be formulaic, that it has to be that way. But I think that even if that's not the case, the character will have, there's a certain kind of heart story that will take place at the center of most films, which is what people remember. That's what people, that's why people remember movies, is because of that sort of story within the story. And, you know, I'm always chasing it down with my own stuff. And, you know, sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I start with a story that's very external, and you have to start somewhere, and you may not know what it's really about until you've written it. And you can outline and outline and outline, but I think in writing is where, if you really let yourself go when you're writing, if you really, you know, take the ride with it, you'll discover what you'll learn, what it's in you, and you're sort of the instrument that's going to get it out, but it's going to, you want it to have a life of its own on the page.
Yeah. You know, and even in talking with Scott, Scott Myers, the other half of Screenwriting Masterclass, for those listening, you know, we were talking about character and how character is everything, because character suggests plot, you know, everything comes from character, you know, and those moments where they change in the film, that all comes from, you know, their character and either wanting or needing to change. And, you know, this whole idea where you can, you know, sort of take a, you know, an outline, formulaic outline, and just plug whatever in there, I think is a downfall to a lot of screenwriters, because I've seen them, you know, try to say, oh man, you know, on page 17, I got to have this. And on page 30, I got to have this. And, you know, you just go, you know, you wonder why movies become formulaic. Well, it's because of stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that, you know, I mean, the formulas or the dramatic structure wasn't invented before the first stories were told. The stories were told naturally. People just told stories. And then after a while, people sat down, well, why is everybody listening to him or her? You know, and then they realized, oh, well, you know, this is where, you know, they set it up here, and they, you know, they worked it. And then they, oh, there was this point where everything went downhill completely to the bottom, the main character, they all bottomed out. And then there was this lift, you know, at the, so yeah, they figured they saw that in what those, but the stories came first. And so there was no theory. So, and the theory is a way to sort of, you know, sometimes you may write just, okay, I know I'm going to need these things. And it's a way to start writing. It's a way to get going. But you want to just let the story, you want to just kind of find the story in its rawest form. And then it may be misshapen in some way, or it may be missing some elements, like, you know, and then you can go to the formula or go to those models of how scripts are structured, and, you know, the idea, the lessons about dramatic structure, and just sort of measure what you have against those ideas about structure. And it might say, wow, you know, I never really, I didn't really explore my characters in enough before the point, you know, before the, you know, when everything got really bad, the all's lost moment, so to speak, you know. So you can use it to kind of diagnose, but you may not want to necessarily start, you may want to write instinctively at first and then see how it fits into those structural models as kind of a remedy. It's like in acting, you know, the method acting, you know, is this way of this way of sort of imagining, I'll oversimplify it, but it's if an actor has a part that they're doing, they may dig deep in their own experience to find moments that will make them feel the moments in their real life that made them feel in a similar way to the characters, the way the character might be feeling because of what's going on in the story. So they'll plug that in and they'll realize, okay, at that point, I'm going to think about when I saw the elephant get euthanized or whatever it is, you know, so that'll make me cry. So maybe in the movie, they're watching, you know, something completely, you know, they're observing a soldier dying in a bed or something, you know, whatever it is. But they use that emotional moment from their real life to sort of make themselves feel and appear or the way that they're supposed to appear. And that's method acting. But some actors may need to do that every second of a, you know, how complicated would that be? Every moment you're trying to scotch tape together something that happened from in your life. I think most of the time, most actors, even method actors, are just imagining it. They jump into the character and then they imagine it. And then they reach a bump in the road at a certain point where, you know, they're facing that soldier dying in the bed and they're just not feeling it, or they just don't feel like they really have a clear understanding of what it would really, they can't bring, they're just looking for more from what they want to be from their performance. So in that piece of their performance, they may use that idea from that experience from their real life and bring it in and then just use that there. So that, and then it, on film, people, you know, it will work really well because they seem to be, the emotion is really, you know, appropriate for what for what's going on at that point. And it could be a great performance, but that's a technique, and that's may not be a technique that is used every second of, you know, it's just like, you don't do that all the time. An actor doesn't do that all the time. Just the same way a writer may not use the formulas all the time as they write. They may just write, and when they hit that bump in the road, or when they just want something more, they feel like there's something missing, then they'll go to the technique. Then they'll go to the formulas and use it as a helper. So,
And it's also something too, Tom, you know, as we talk, you know, about writing and, you know, and we're talking about outlining, because, you know, when I've outlined and then I started to actually write it, I've had a lot of aha moments as I'm actually writing. You know, I'm sort of like, oh, okay, you know, maybe this could happen. You know what I mean? You start getting these ideas that you sort of maybe can't see with the outline, because the outline really ends up becoming like a lot of broad strokes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's what I've learned too, is, you know, as we're making this outline, to really get in there, and it's, you're able to sort of now say, okay, now this scene has to come out of this scene, and now we can do this. And, you know, within this scene, this is how this reversal happens in this scene, because, you know, it started off with guy A has all the power, and then it ends with guy B having all the power, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I completely agree. I think that, you know, I feel like I outline too much, and that I'd be better off just writing pages, and then I want to be writing pages, just to let myself be writing pages. And then there's this fear that, oh no, if I write pages, you know, I'm going to write myself into a hole with stuff that doesn't make sense. And I, you know, but I think that there is a point where you really want to, you know, you want to write. And I think in some ways you can, I also like to, and I advise, start writing, go forward, see what's going to happen, and then go back to your outline, play with your outline based on what you write, you know, restructure based on the inspiration that comes from the writing, because it will change. It should change. You know, if you're writing for, you know, if you have a deadline and you have a producer, you know, a company or something, and they've approved an outline, well, that's different. You know, you can diverge a little bit, but you may have to stick with it. But, you know, if you're just writing your own script, you just like, you know, free yourself up, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, I started off writing feature films, and now I actually just wrote two TV pilots, right. One half hour, one drama. And now, you know, I see, you know, as talking with like Jennifer Grassani, as she was on the podcast a few episodes ago, you know, we're talking about creating that Bible, you know, and just creating a pitch and making sure that all this stuff is set so that, you know, they know that you have a vision of where this is going to go. And, you know, the whole thing folds back. You know, you have the vision of where it's going to go in the series arc, what's going to happen in season one, which is the season one arc. And then you have the entire, you know, episodic arc about that season. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, putting all this stuff together, and you realize, you know, making a TV pilot is actually really, really difficult. And I actually might venture off, Tom, and saying, you know, pound for pound, it might be the most difficult of doing all this stuff, you know, whether we're talking about writing web series or feature films or TV. You know, I think writing a TV pilot, because you have to get everything in motion. And you have to, you know, make sure that, you know, it's intriguing and all that stuff. And you have to introduce all these characters within, you know, 30, you know, 1 hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. It's really hard. And, you know, I think the idea of having to present this, they want more, you know, they want an episode and, you know, the pilot and then outlines for a couple episodes and then the whole, you know, a season summary, you know, a season Bible of some sort, or just, you know, descriptions of many, many things. It's really, it's like you're pre-writing a novel. It's tough, you know, and you can get away. I think you can get away with less if you have a really strong pilot, but you do have to give them a line. I was speaking with a writer, you know, who's done a lot of stuff. And he was saying that, the speculation of the season of the Bible is just like BS, that most of the time it's not going to end up that way. You know, that you can't really know, you can't really predetermine the season from just writing the pilot. And maybe some people can, I don't know. I don't know if that's okay, but there are buyers who are buying the entire, you know, Amazon, they're just buying the entire season. So that's really what you're, you know, you're going in and they you want to sell them, you know, the production of an entire season of the show. So you better have something planned.
Yeah, and you're right. It is like setting up a novel. It's you know, because you have to make sure they have to make sure that you know where this is going. You know, it's not just sort of like the pilot and then you're like, well, I got to kind of figure out where everything goes from here. You know, and speaking of writing for TV, you actually have an upcoming TV writing class, correct, Tom?
I do. I have one. It's this week. When is this airing? I have a 1 week class this week, and then in September I have a pilot workshop that's going to be going on. So
this will be airing about 2 weeks, so maybe beginning of September.
Yeah. Let me tell you. Let me get the dates here for you. I can figure that out here. One second.
Sure.
Two weeks. Okay. September 5th, right after Labor Day, I have a Pages 1, Writing the First Draft. That's a feature class. And then on September 12th, I have Pages 2. It's a rewrite class for features. And we also do TV pilots in there as well. So it's, you know, that one, both can be in there. And then on the 26th of September, I have a Pages TV, original TV pilot script workshop. So that's a 10-week pilot workshop where we, you know, we work out a whole series concept and pilot script in that class. So I have those things upcoming at Screenwriting Masterclass online.
Very cool, Tom. You know, so, you know, and I'll make sure to link to those in the show notes, everyone. And, you know, in closing, Tom, because I know we're just about out of time, is there anything that we didn't discuss or anything you sort of want to say to put a period at the end of this conversation?
Well, it was great speaking with you. And, I encourage people to write, to tell their stories. And just, you know, I think that the writing itself and, you know, doing creative writing and, you know, concentrating in a form like screenwriting or pilot writing, I think that it's its own reward. And simultaneously, there's a great world out there. And as much as we're, you know, we still have one foot in the way things were in feature films, and we've actually moved forward into this new realm in film entertainment, and it's really because of the changes in technology and the changes in lifestyle have been going on. It's an incredible time for film entertainment, and it's an incredible visual time. Visual elements are so important, and film, video, and filmed elements on the web in all ways are so important. So, imagining out these stories in script form is just a great thing to do, and it's important to have fun with it and to, you know, love. Find out what the shows are and the movies are that you really love, and keep watching and keep reading. And, you know, that's about all. That's it. No.
Very cool, Tom. And where can people find you at online?
Screenwritingmasterclass.com. If anybody has any questions, I'm Tom, T-O-M, at screenwritingmasterclass.com. And I also have a podcast, which I started very recently, which we have the first three episodes are up. It's called theprocess.ink, and we're on iTunes, and we're talking about the creative process. And I've had some amazing, you know, I had today I spoke with Billy Finkelstein, who's, you know, he's on the writing staff of the spinoff to The Good Wife, and he wrote this Bad Lieutenant, City of New Orleans that Werner Herzog directed with Nicolas Cage, which was a very good film. He did that. So we were talking about that, and he worked on L.A. Law, and he worked on Cop Rock, and he's a good friend of David Milch, and a real interesting guy. He's worked on all these different shows. He worked on Law and Order, and now he's on this show at CBS. So we talked about, you know, running shows and creating shows, and I'm going to be talking with Beck Smith, who's an indie specialist at United Talent Agency next week, and I'm going to be speaking to someone who works at Upright Citizens Brigade and stand-up comic, and I've had other interesting guests. So theprocess.ink, please check it out, and any requests for kinds of guests, I'm open to feedback about what I'm doing on the show.
Excellent. And I will also link to that in the show notes, everyone. You can always find me at DaveBullis.com and Twitter. It's at Dave_Bullis. Tom, I want to say thank you very much for coming on the show, sir.
Thank you very much. This is a pleasure. And I hope we'll talk soon. I'll see you in the Werner Herzog class.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. yeah, it's a small world. Yeah. But yeah, I know, Tom, I know our paths will cross again very soon.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Take care, Tom.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Inside the Screenwriter's Mind at screenwritersmind.com.